Chapter 18. The Desert Journey. The journey was a long one. The winds were often so light that the vessel scarcely moved, and the heat was greater than anything they had felt thus far in their journey. They stopped at many small ports on the Arabian side, the captain trading with the natives, selling to them articles of Egyptian manufacture, and buying the products of the country for sale in Egypt. The party had, before starting, arranged that they would land at Elana, a town lying at the head of the gulf of the same name, forming the eastern arm of the Red Sea. By so doing, they would avoid the passage through Lower Egypt, which would save them an arduous, much longer route. Meanwhile, no hint had been given to the captain that they had any intention of cutting short their voyage before arriving at Arsinoe. While sailing up the gulf, Maissa complained of illness, and indeed so overpowered was she by the heat there was but little fiction in the complaint. Upon arriving at Elana, Jethro had her carried on shore, and hiring a house there, they stayed on shore while the ship was in port. 2 days later, Jethro went on board again and said that his young son was so ill there was no chance of his being able to proceed on the journey, and that therefore he must forfeit the passage money paid to Arsinoe. He then said that, as it might be many weeks before another vessel would come along, he should endeavor to pay his way by trading with the natives, and he therefore wished to purchase from the captain a portion of his remaining goods suitable for the purpose. The captain assented without question to Jethro's proposal. Several bales of goods were made up, consisting principally of cloths of various textures and colors, trinkets, and a selection of arms. Then, after the vessel set sail, Jethro returned home, and he told his companions the arrangements he had made. "There is ample store of your father's gold still unexhausted, Kebron. Therefore, as this seems to be the most hazardous part of our journey, we will not stint money in performing it in safety. We shall start in a week's time. It would not do to leave earlier. You must not recover too rapidly from your illness, Maissa. In the meantime, I will make it my business to pick out a score of good fighting men as our escort." All the arrangements having been concluded, the party started soon after dawn on the day fixed upon. The girls were still in male attire and rode in large baskets slung one on each side of a camel. The camel driver walked at the head of the animal, leading it by a cord. Its fellows followed in a long line, each fastened to the one before it. Jethro, Amuba, and Kebron, all armed with bows and arrows as well as swords, rode beside the girl's camel. Half the escort went on ahead, the other half formed the rear guard. Jethro asked the camel driver, "Which is the most dangerous part of the journey?"
"That on which we are now entering. Once we arrive at Petra, we are comparatively safe, but this portion of the journey passes over a rough and uninhabited country, and it is across this line that the wandering tribesmen pass in their journeys to or from the pastures round Mount Sinai."
"How long shall we be reaching Petra?"
"It is 3 days' fair travelling, but by journeying well on to sundown we could accomplish it in 2. After that we can travel at our ease."
"Let us push on, then, by all means," said Jethro. "We can stay a day at Petra to rest the beasts, but let us get through this desolate and dangerous country as soon as we can." The girls had been greatly amused at first at the appearance of the strange animal that was carrying them, but they soon found that the swinging action of the camel was extremely fatiguing, and they would have gladly got down and walked. Jethro, however, said that this could not be, for the pace of the animal, deliberate though it seemed, was yet too great for them to keep up with on foot. They traveled on until the sun was just sinking, and then prepared to camp for the night. The camels were made to kneel down so as to form a square. In the center of this the tent was pitched for the girls, the horses being arranged in a circle outside. The night passed without any cause for alarm. As soon as daylight broke, the camp was astir, and just as the sun rose, the cavalcade moved on. They had journeyed but half a mile when from behind a spur of hills running out into the plain a large party was seen to issue forth. There must have been fully 100 of them, of whom some 20 were mounted and the rest on foot. The travelers halted and had a short consultation. Jethro, with one of the escort, then rode out to meet the advancing party, waving a white cloth in token of amity. Two of the Arabs rode forward to meet them. It was some time before Jethro returned to his party. Amuba asked, "What do they say, Jethro?"
"To begin with, that we ought to have purchased from their chief the right of traveling across this country. I said that I would gladly have paid a moderate sum, had I been aware that such was required, but that as he was not an Alana, I could not tell that he claimed such a right. After a long conversation, he let me know pretty plainly that he intended to take all our goods and animals, and that we might think ourselves fortunate in being allowed to pursue our way on foot. I said I would consult my friends, that if they agreed to his terms, we would keep the white flag flying, but if we refused them, we would lower it. I propose that we should form the camels into a square, as we did last night. Then you two and six of the men armed with bows and arrows shall occupy it and take care of the girls, while the rest of us charge them. But while we are doing so, some of those on foot may rush forward and attack you. We will take care not to pursue, and you can rely upon our coming to your assistance if you are attacked."
"I think that is the best plan, Jethro."
Then Jethro chose six of the men who professed themselves to be good archers. Their horses' legs were tied, and the animals were made to lie down just outside the square formed by the kneeling camels. Strict instructions were given to the girls to stay low, and the saddles and bales were arranged outside the camels to shield them from missiles. All this was done quickly, at which time the white flag was lowered, and Jethro with his 14 men rode at full gallop against the enemy. Trusting to their superior numbers, the enemy horsemen advanced to meet them, but Jethro's party, obeying his orders to keep in a close line together, with their spears leveled in front of them, rode right over the enemy, who came up singly and without order. Men and horses rolled over together, several of the former transfixed by the spears of the horsemen. Jethro called upon his men to halt and turn for another charge. Some of the enemy fled towards the footmen, who were running up to their assistance, but were pursued and cut down. Others fought to the last, silently and desperately, but these two were slain. The enemy footmen approached and opened fire with slings and stones. Jethro rallied his men and formed them in line again, and at their head charged once more. The enemy at first closed in round the little party of horsemen, throwing their javelins and hacking at them with their swords. Jethro spurred his horse into their midst, dealing blows right and left with his heavy battle axe. His followers pressed after him, and after a hard fighting cut their way through their opponents. Again and again the maneuver was repeated, the resistance of the natives weakening, while the large shields of the horsemen deflected most of the missiles hurled at Jethro's party. In another minute or two, the enemy turned and fled. Jethro had time now to look around and saw for the first time that he had not, as he supposed, been engaged with the whole of the enemy's party. While some 50 of them had attacked him, the rest had made direct for the camels and were now gathered in a mass around them. Jethro galloped back at full speed and flung himself upon the enemy. He was just in time. A desperate conflict was raging across the camels. Several of the attackers had broken into the square, but had been bravely opposed by Amuba, Kebron, and one of the men, while the others held back the enemy on the other side. The arrival of Jethro and his men instantly put a stop to the conflict. The enemy no longer thought of attacking, but with cries of dismay rushed off to the hills. Jethro leaped down from his horse.
"You were almost too late, Jethro," Amuba said.
"I was indeed. I thought that I was engaged with the whole of the footmen, and in the heat of the fight did not notice that a party had moved off to attack you. Are the girls unharmed?"
"We are both safe,"
Mysa replied. Of Jethro's party, two had fallen, and all had received wounds more or less severe. Three of the men most seriously wounded were placed on the bales carried by camels, and the party again set out. "Now, Amuba, let us hear about your fight," said Jethro.
"There is little to tell," Amuba said.
"As soon as they came within range of our arrows, we began. I shot four before they reached us, and I think Kebron did the same. But the men with us shot poorly, and I do not think they were very effective. It would have gone very hard with us in another minute or two if you had not come to the rescue. It has been a tough fight, and we are well out of it. I hope I shall not be called on to use my battle axe again until I am fighting in the ranks of the Ribu."